Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. You're listening at CindySheehanSoapbox.com, CommunityProgressiveRadio.org, or the podcast from iTunes. And I also understand that we're on No Lies Radio, so you may be listening to us from No Lies Radio. And today we have a very interesting and inspiring and motivating show. Our guest is Dr. Jack Nelson Pallmeyer. Besides being an American academic who's written many, many books, he's a peace activist, and he's the leader spokesperson for the Minnesota Arms Spending Alternatives Project, so Minnesota ASAP. And they did something very exciting and inspiring. They had the St. Paul City Council pass a resolution demanding that the money that's sent from Minnesota, or I guess St. Paul, to Washington, D.C. for the war's end and be prioritized for human needs and not war machine greed. And so after this brief break, we'll be back with Professor Jack Nelson Pallmeyer. So stay tuned.
Hello, this is Cindy Sheehan. America's war on terror has become a war of terror, with endless drone bombings, continuing military occupation, as well as detention, rendition, and torture still being practiced under the current administration. I lost my precious son Casey to war, and now work towards a day when not one more mother, son, or daughter will suffer such a loss. Listen to my podcast, read my blog, and come join me at any activities I attend near you. Please visit CindySheehanSoapbox.com for more information, and let's work for peace together.
Professor Jack Nelson Pallmeyer, welcome to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for being on the show. And what you all did in St. Paul, to me, was very exciting. I had heard about what happened, and then somebody from your organization reached out to me, and I think this is a perfect way we can tell other people how to do this in their own community, or maybe inspire other people to do what you all did in St. Paul, Minnesota, in their communities. So first of all, tell my listeners a little bit about the Minnesota Arms Spending Alternatives Project.
Okay, well, we started this project about a year ago, and basically with the desire to call attention to the relationship between state and local budget crises. In my view, we have essentially reduced governance to managing austerity, and it wouldn't have to be that way if we weren't squandering our wealth on war. So in Minnesota, the statistics are really graphic, and this would be true in any other state as well. But we were able to point out, for example, that Minnesota taxpayers had spent now $40 billion, just as Minnesota taxpayers, for Iraq and Afghanistan, while we shut down the state government over a $5 billion shortfall. You know, and that's not even counting the base Pentagon budget, which has effectively doubled since the end of the Cold War. So what we're doing is we have put together a simple resolution, and we're asking community groups and individuals to take this resolution to churches and synagogues and different government agencies, civic groups, environmental groups, and it basically just calls attention to the spending priorities that are killing us. And calls has a simple ask that we want a shift in federal spending priorities from war to meeting our community needs. And we, as you mentioned, we had this resolution passed unanimously by the St. Paul City Council a little over a week ago.
And what does the resolution say?
There's two components to it. The first is just some whereas clauses, and that allows individual groups to frame a message connected to your own community or your own state. Mm-hmm. And the National Priorities Project has great information about the military spending. So we just point out some of these facts, and then it's a pretty simple ask at the end. it communicates with our, it asks, it says, let's say, the St. Paul City Council communicates with the Minnesota Congressional Delegation, calling on them to work to shift priorities away from military spending to meeting community needs. So it's a pretty simple ask. Some of the resolutions have specifically named both the White House and the Congressional Delegation. In the case of the St. Paul City Council resolution, they chose to focus on the Minnesota Congressional Delegation. But that's the basic point. But as you're aware, Cindy, that what we're trying to get at here is that we have an incredible militarized culture out there. And right. This is an opportunity, I feel, we have an opportunity, as in every community around the country, people are struggling over something they care about. Their libraries are being closed, or firefighters are being let off. Schools are being closed.
Teachers are being laid off.
Exactly. So
potholes are the size of swimming pools.
Exactly.
In the streets.
All of those things that people care about, and they're not making a connection between that and the cost of militarization and war. And
we're
bringing that to their attention.
Last year, when the Occupy movement was so strong, I was going to the different Occupies around the country, and I was telling them this. I would go to the National Priorities Project and to find out specifically how much money each community, each county, each state was sending to the federal government for the wars. And I would tell the Occupy people, it's really good to call for education, debt relief, free university education, stop foreclosures, stop firing teachers, stop closing schools. It's really good to call for all these things, but if you would make your first call to end the wars and the empire and reduce the military budget dramatically, then the nation and your community would have enough money for these things. It's not that we don't have enough money. It's just the priorities of where the money's spent.
Right. And what kind of reception did you get?
Almost really lukewarm.
Uh-huh.
You know, very lukewarm reception to this idea. But,
I think it's
so
very...
That's what I'm really excited that you have this almost like it's like a blueprint for other communities to use.
Exactly. I mean, and you know, we have been trying to model something here that has started to really take off, and I feel really good about that. And it can be adapted by others. And again, people can visit our website. It's just www.mn, in our case, Minnesota, mnasap.org. And lots of information about what we're doing and how people could do it. People might be also interested, in light of what you just said, Cindy, in my latest book. It's a book called Authentic Hope, and the subtitle is, It's the End of the World as We Know It, but Soft Landings Are Possible.
Mm-hmm.
And really I'm looking at if we would, as you say, reject empire, and redirect the resources. I tell people, here's something to tell people. If we were to reject a militarized empire and free up those resources, it would be like winning the lottery every day for the rest of our lives.
Absolutely.
And those are the kind of resources that we're talking about. And even, you know, we're talking about winding down the war in Afghanistan, but next year in Afghanistan, the U.S. will spend more money on the war in Afghanistan than our entire food stamp budget for the United States.
Right.
You know, so these trade-offs that we're making. Now, the hopeful thing for me, I'll tell you a story about my barber. I came out of my barber a couple of months ago almost bald, even though I don't keep my hair that short, because he was asking me what I was doing, and I was telling him about this Minnesota Arms Spending Alternatives Project, and I told him about, you know, that Minnesotans had now spent $40 billion just for the Iraq and Afghan wars. And he's just going wild, you know, he's talking and cutting and cutting and cutting. But at the end of our conversation, my local barber, Jim, he just said, Jack, every person in Minnesota needs to know what you just told me. And if they knew, most would be outraged and demand something different. And
right.
And I think that's largely correct, you know, that I think there's a space for a conversation, and now we have a means through this resolution process where, you know, another thing we're going to do, Cindy, at least we're hoping to do this year now, is put up billboards in local mm-hmm. communities, and we can get, you know, we can get the budgets for many, many small towns and cities of how much they have spent for these wars and how much they're spending for the inflated Pentagon budget. And to have those, you know, staring people in the face when they're driving into their little town, I think is going to have quite an impact.
Are you working with any other communities, and specifically in particular at this moment?
We have initiative. One, we're working. We're not asking people to form a new organization, you know, to be local chapters of the Minnesota ASAP group. We're asking people who are either individuals or hopefully connected to organizations to see that this issue intersects with their concern. And so really uh-huh. we're relying upon, you know, people who are probably already busy in some ways, already doing many good things, but who are going to take this resolution again to local groups and city councils and different things. So we have initiatives underway now in probably 15 or 20 different cities where there are groups laying a foundation to bring this before city councils or school boards, library boards, all kinds of different groups. We're hoping to have the Minneapolis City Council vote on this. It probably won't be until after the election, but uh-huh. we've laid the foundation for that. So, again, I feel like it takes some work, and we have a good organizer. We actually have a three-quarter time paid staff person who is working with us, and we have a really good kind of support group that meets on a regular basis and does planning and strategy and outreach and follow-up and things. But really this can be done as a fairly low-budget way of having some pretty big impact, I think.
I totally agree with you. And, you know, I wish that, you know, the Occupy movement, well, at least the ones I talked to had moved closer to to those kinds of ideas. But to me, it's very exciting that you're providing that pathway for people to jump on. And I'll certainly put the information out on my blog and on my website, and it's on the radio show now. And, you know, I think it would be something very good to do post-election. I mean, people get in this frenzy every 4 years, and I think this is actually something that substance that, you know, you've proven can be successful. And I think in our movement, there's so very few things that we get a chance to celebrate. I was just very encouraged and inspired when I heard about what you all did in St. Paul.
And I think what, you know, what we can do, as you're suggesting too, is that the idea is to do this all over the state and to create a conversation. And I see it really as an opportunity to challenge that culture of war and begin, you know, conversations with people who may not be thinking about this issue directly, but they're thinking about other things. And I also think it's a way we need, and you're very aware of this, you've been very good on this, this issue transcends the Democratic and Republican parties,
mm-hmm.
who are so prone to militarization and war and give in to mm-hmm. those. If you listen to the presidential debate the other night, it was pretty disgusting in terms of the uniformity of views. And this is a way of cracking some holes in that. And I see it as a way to really build a kind of social movement across issue lines that intersect with militarism and war, because they all do, because of the spending priorities that our country puts in that area.
Also, Jack, it's I think human nature to care about something more that directly affects you, and so few people have experienced the same loss I have because of these wars of empire here in the United States, that they don't think that the wars are affecting or intruding onto their daily life.
Right.
But what you're doing and what the National Priorities Project is doing is actually smashing that myth that the wars aren't harming every single man, woman, and child, not just in the United States, but on this entire planet.
Exactly. No, that's really well said. And, you know, one of the things that we've found is that when you go out and you talk to some, we have, by the way, we have over 38 over a third of our state legislature has signed on to our resolution, and we're going to be going back to them as well. So there's tremendous interest there because a lot of those people get it. They understand that there is a relationship between federal spending priorities and money available to states. And then that trickles down. The state that manages austerity, that impacts counties and cities. So, you know, we have found, or I have found, a very receptive audience in among many of the elected officials at all levels of government. Unless they're ideologically driven, they are very aware that what they are doing right now is just managing austerity. And it's really frustrating for them. They see all kinds of needs in their community that are going unmet because of this trickle-down impact of the militarized budget. And so, again, there's an opportunity here.
Well, and in my own state, California, in 2011, the governor proposed, we had a $26 billion deficit. And that's bigger than the budgets of most states.
Right.
You know, the entire budget. So we had a $26 billion deficit. And my governor, Jerry Brown, you know, he proposed to close up that gap by raising taxes for half of it, and then for austerity measures against who he called people who are already suffering. He wants to make those, unfortunately, he said, but we have to make those people suffer more.
Right.
And I looked up in the National Priorities Project, and the $13 billion that he wanted to cut is what we send to the U.S. government every year, what California sends to the U.S. government every year for these wars.
Right. It's actually even higher than that, I think. It's unbelievable. I know I kind of followed California and thought, in fact, I think I even talk about California as an example, another example in my book on Authentic Hope of here's a state with this huge deficit. But if you look at the numbers in terms of militarization and war costs, you could quite easily resolve your budget issues if we just had a sane foreign policy.
Do you delve at all into, not only does the state of California send a lot to the U.S. government for the wars and, you know, the form of income taxes and, you know, what else are there levies that we have to provide and provide National Guard? You know, our National Guard goes to these wars. What about, because California, I think every congressional district now, this is true of, has some, you know, a profound amount of war profiteers.
Right.
Defense,
right.
What they call defense contractors. So what happens when I'm not saying that they contribute much to the state of California because they don't, you know, the corporate tax rate is very low in the state of California. But what happens to things, what happens to unemployment, what happens to other tax-based issues when we end these wars and stop, you know, giving our taxes to the government for this? Is there kind of a trade-off? A little bit of a trade-off. Have you studied that at all?
Yeah, we have, and it's an area we talk about some on our website, and we'll be doing more in the coming months now. But for example, it's very important, I think, that we lay out ideas for peace conversion. How do we convert our economy from a war economy to a peace economy? We also talk about the job implications of military spending and. Military spending is a horrible job creator. Spending in almost any other area, whether it's infrastructure, or education, or again, almost anything else, you create oftentimes twice as many jobs per $1 billion spent. So we're lifting up that argument. And now, very importantly, in the months to come here now, we're also making the argument, which is a very good one, that there's all kinds of fear-mongering now about if the military budget is cut, how many jobs are going to be lost. And what we point out is you actually lose far more jobs. If you're going to cut, you lose far more jobs if you cut in the social service sector than you do if you cut in the military sector. So the economic impact and social impact of budget cuts in the military, yes, there'll be some, but they're not nearly as grave as they are if they're cut in other areas. Plus, you lose the social benefit of those dollars and of that work that's being done. And, for example, I'll give you, we are pointing out, there was an article in the paper, a front page article in the Star Trib, the main newspaper in Minnesota, about how Minnesota might lose 4,000 jobs and over $3 billion in economic activity over the next 9 years, is what they were saying, if these budget cuts come to the military. Well, we pointed out that, okay, we're going to lose $3 billion in economic activity, but over the same nine-year period, Minnesota taxpayers will spend $150 billion just for our share of the base Pentagon budget. So we have to put those numbers and that fear in perspective. So yes, the peace conversion, we should be worried about that. We should be concerned about how we transition to a different economy. But already we have tremendous evidence that cutting the military budget has a much less harmful impact on the economy and communities and social welfare than similar dollar amount cuts in other areas.
Well, there, you know, there's also a huge moral tint, an ethical tint to this conversation too, besides just the base economic.
Absolutely, yeah.
But can you talk about, you know, I don't want to spring this on you if you can't talk about it, but have you researched or do you have any information about all of the defense contractors who actually use prison labor for their
No, we have not researched that, but I'm hearing you know, more people bring up this issue, so it certainly has piqued my interest and is something that I will be watching for. But it isn't something that we have specifically focused on. And Minnesota, unlike California, Minnesota is probably more like there was a study done in Massachusetts about the relative impact of military spending versus spending on social services and construction and other things, and it just showed that Massachusetts was losing big time in terms of the dollars that it was contributing to the military sector. So just on that level, Minnesota is much more like Massachusetts. And then Minnesota also tends to have better prison conditions by far than California,
uh-huh.
for example. So right. I don't think that's an issue here in Minnesota so much, both because we don't have the same kind of plethora of companies that are war profiteers. We do have some, but also the prison system here is I think it's probably still not great, but it's more humane than California's for sure.
Right. Well, and of course they don't pay prisoners union wages. They don't even pay the minimum wages.
No, it's almost slave labor.
They
yeah.
have to work on these kinds of things. Well, Jack, this has been a very interesting conversation, and you know, I think that, like I said, it's something that we can all be inspired by and aspire to in our own communities. Is there anything you want to add?
No, just again, first of all, thank you for all the great work that you continue to do. And just to reiterate what you're saying, I think that we have created at least if it's not an exact model, it's something that people can build on. We're excited about the impact that we're having in Minnesota and the potential for even doing better work and extending the reach of that conversation that we intend to have. So I hope people will check out our website again, www.mnasap.org. And again, what we're doing isn't rocket science, and it's something that many, many people could be doing in their local communities.
Yeah, and you know, the brilliant thing about things like this is that, you know, not every community is exactly the same. So, you know, if there's like a pathway, then people can tailor it to their own communities also.
Exactly.
And I would say go and, you know, align yourself or ally yourself with people you're already working with but then, you know, find some other people who might be natural allies in the struggle that you haven't worked with before.
Exactly. That's what we're trying to do here, and so far I think it's working pretty well.
Well, Professor Jack Nelson Pallmeyer, I'd like to thank you for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox and being so flexible with my issues I've had. Thank you for your work, and thank you for being on the show, and we'll
You're
get
welcome.
The word out.
All right. Okay. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Oh, thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, that was our show for today. I hope you learned something. I know I did. I would like to thank our guest, Professor Jack Nelson Pallmeyer. I'd like to thank Don DeBar for being the engineer and our connection to Community Progressive Radio. I'd like to thank No Lies Radio for their great and extensive and complete archive of Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I'm going to be switching over to their archive, linking their archive soon, because it really is more extensive than my own archive. And I'd like to thank my producer, Mikey, and I'd like to thank especially you for listening and supporting the show. As we're going out of the show today, I'd like to play a song that my friend Dylan Avery, who was one of the creators of Loose Change, wrote. The other day on Facebook, I was getting tired of people saying that they hated Obama's policies and especially his wars, but they had to vote for him. And I said, how do you feel about voting for a baby killer? And the people said, we don't feel very good about it, but we're going to vote for him anyway. So I posted that someone should write a song called I'm Voting for a Baby Killer Blues. And here's Dylan's song that he had written and posted on my Facebook wall within hours. I think it's an excellent song. So I'm Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. Peace out for now, and here's Dylan's song, I'm Voting for a Baby Killer Blues.
Hey now, brothers and sisters, tell me, have you heard the news? An election's round the corner. Now which man will you choose? There's a Bible in his left hand, a rifle in his right. It seems that all this fella wants to do is fuss and fight. His hair's as slick as gasoline, there's blood on his fancy shoes. I've got the voting for a baby killer blues. I've got the voting for a baby killer blues. He says he wants to help the poor and bring the rich to task. But the face he wears up on the stage is nothing but a mask. Why spend our money on schools and roads when fleets of tanks await? There's no money to be made of love and tongues to make of hate. So if you let this fella win, then you and I will lose. I've got the voting for a baby killer blues. I've got the voting for a baby killer blues. I've got the voting.